The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The people on this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about, so please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation, as it's just opinion. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 367. On the podcast today, CEO of Savannah Resources, ticker code SAV, Dave Archer will be here answering your questions you've submitted. Plus, I have Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about advanced oncotherapy and the state of the market. And let's be honest, it's in heck of a state. If we ever needed Santa to come along with his rally, we need it now. Santa, we need you. Plus, I have today's penny stock with potential, as suggested by you. If you know of a penny stock that has potential upside, please click the link here at sharepickers.com. Having said that, at the moment, you know, any stock is pretty much getting hammered, isn't it? There's not a lot out there doing very well, you know, reflecting the true value. It's a lot of bargains out there. If you've got the money, there's bargains out there. It's because it's a problem with uncertainty. Where's this market going? You know, that's the problem right there. Joining me on the podcast right now is Chief Executive Officer of Savannah Resources, David Archer. Thank you for joining me from Oman, I think you're in, David, aren't you?
Indeed, yes, and good afternoon.
Oh, thanks. Well, thanks for that. So, David, can you give us a brief outline? What's Savannah all about? I know a little bit about it, but for people who have no idea what you do, can you give us a broad outline as to what you do and what your assets are?
Okay. AIM listed clearly, very modest market cap of around about £4 million, and a focus on two geographies and two commodities, Oman and copper, and Mozambique and mineral sands. Just quickly on Oman, it's historically been a very major and significant producer of copper. One of the good things about Oman is that the deposits exhibit higher grades, and that means that the grades relate to so higher revenue levels and more profitability. So it's a prize well worth pursuing. And the grades in Oman are generally very superior to the grades on other projects elsewhere in the world. So Oman in copper, and looking to move our projects into production in the very short term, at least in mining terms, over the next 2 years. Our second area of operation is Mozambique in mineral sands. Mozambique is one of the premier titanium dioxide provinces in the world, with major deposits are located there, and we have a joint venture with the Tier 1 mining major Rio Tinto over the very major Matamba deposit, which we have joined our own Jangamo deposit to sort of consolidate a very significant position on the coast of Mozambique.
Okay, all right. Well, let's go through some questions submitted by private investors. So, number one, the market doesn't seem to understand the drilling data and how significant they are. Can you please, in layman terms, explain what we're looking at developing, please?
Yep. In layman's terms, I mean, it's high-grade copper. You don't find much of this elsewhere in the world. And these sorts of deposits, especially for a smaller company like ourselves, you know, provide really sort of superior characteristics that mean that you can not only go into production, but make real money from them. I'm all about a company that makes money on its mining. And I really like to sort of see projects that you know, provide superior returns to shareholders. And these sort of projects are the ones that can actually do it. As well as that, the development setting in Oman is really sort of first rate, very low energy costs, sort of clearly fantastic infrastructure, port facilities nearby. There's a copper smelter. This is like being in the Mount Isa, built in Queensland on a smaller scale, and certainly at a scale that's very doable for a company like ourselves. And remembering that myself and my team have deep industry experience in developing copper mines, both small, medium, and large.
Okay, and continue on Oman there. Someone else said, could you give us a sense of the scale of the copper asset in Oman, for example, by comparison with deals for similar-sized great assets that have gone through in recent years? So, yeah, what kind of, you know, value are you talking of here?
Well, so reluctant really sort of to talk about value, but very happy to talk about scale. And we just announced, I think, some really significant conclusions this morning. We announced an exploration target for our deposits ranging from around about 10 million tonnes through to about 29 million tonnes at a grade range of between 1.4 and 2% copper. What is clear is that in that range there's potentially many at least a few hundred thousand tonnes of contained copper. That's a significant resource and very much of an attractive scale for a company, as I say, of our small size. This is no Oyu Tolgoi of Rio Tinto's, but equally we don't have market cap Rio Tinto size. So it's of relevant scale and I think a very highly valuable prize. And in terms of the exploration results themselves, the exploration target, that's based on around about 100,000 metres of drilling. That's like $20 million US dollars worth of exploration expenditure that we've effectively sort of got for the cost of assessing the data. So we're already building up a very sort of significant database of intellectual property around these mines, and we're following it up with a concluding round of drilling at the moment, and we announced some really good copper intersections last week. So we continue to deliver on all of the milestones we've enunciated. We're one of the more active companies on AIM, and what we say is what we deliver, and very proud of our track record. And even if we have to put our head above the parapet and make announcements, which is something that most other companies are not prepared to do these days.
Yeah, and do you have a priority of you know, one asset over the other? Is one taking the forefront, or are you equally developing both?
Well, we think, you know, both of them have got outstanding value opportunities, and I'm asked that question on a few occasions, and it's a bit like trying to say, you know, which of your two daughters do you prefer? Love them both equally, and I think both of them have got great merits.
Okay, all right, and as we know, at the moment, the profile for, you know, commodities is not good. I mean, the price has been hammered. I mean, is this affecting, you know, what you're doing?
Well, some sort of clearly sentiments, not exactly positive at the moment. On the other hand, the copper price is hanging in there at about 210, 212 per pound. I've developed copper mines when the copper price was 80 cents a pound. 210 is very sort of tolerable. But it's not really a question of what happened last week or the week before or the month before that or 2 months before that. What I'm really focused in on is what's the price going to be in 2017, and all of the forecasters are suggesting that there's going to be a shortfall in global copper production, which will provide a very sort of sound basis for an improving copper price, and will provide us with the perfect price framework and setting for developing a mine like our own. And we're going to be one of the first mines out of the gate in 2017. Meanwhile, the pipeline of new copper projects globally is going to be declining at a massive rate as a result of this hiatus in spending. And I think that's going to provide us having a modestly costed CapEx project with a brilliant opportunity and a fantastic opportunity for our shareholders.
Okay, and what is the cost of production there for you?
Well, we haven't announced anything there as yet, but you know, in terms of the exploration target range, you know, we're looking at grades between 1.4 and 2% copper. That is wildly superior to the average grade of new copper developments, which is somewhere in the 0.8% to 0.9% copper range, and it's all about unit costs. The less tonnes of copper you produce, the higher your costs. In our case, because of the higher grade, we'll be producing more tonnes at the same cost, therefore a lower unit cost. So this will certainly be well positioned in terms of the global cost curve for new copper mines.
Yeah, and I mean, let's say, I know everyone's predictions are that there will be a deficit in the copper market, you know, come 2017, like you said. But let's say, you know, for some reason that doesn't happen and the copper price stays what it is. Is it still sort of financially viable at this level for you?
Yeah, I think it's one of these quite robust projects. And I've always sort of said that the development of this project is cycle independent, in the sense that no matter what the price might be and within reasonable sort of tolerances, this project should be capable of profitable development. So clearly we'd love a higher copper price. And what that means with these projects is that we're very much leveraged to superior and stellar returns should the copper price, as we expect, improve in coming years. And certainly my expectation is that it will. The requirements for copper in electronic vehicles, etc., the sort of whole reworking of the global power delivery network will be very positive for copper. And so I think there will be a good sort of following wind, and you know, very heavily supplemented by production shortfalls, and mines like our own will be sort of perfectly positioned and perfectly timed to be selling copper into a much more positive copper price environment.
Yeah. Another question is: what is the current cash balance after the Oman latest drilling program?
Well, we raised just over £500,000 a couple of months ago, so we're pretty comfortable. And so the drilling program was fully funded.
Okay. And can you explain the Oman Sovereign Wealth Fund investment, please, David, if you can?
There's no sovereign wealth fund that is invested in us, but one of the sovereign wealth funds in Oman, the State General Reserve Fund, has invested in, is proposing to invest in Kenmare Resources, which is the largest mineral sands producer in Mozambique, where we also have a deposit. And I think that's a very good sort of validation of both the investment merits of Mozambique, and also is a wonderful investment recommendation for the medium-term price potential for the mineral sand. So we sort of see it as being a very positive statement by a very sort of globally significant sovereign wealth fund.
Yeah, I see. Okay, when is the Mozambique government approval of the Rio JV expected?
Well, that's in train at the moment, and we're sort of hopeful of an early resolution on that. Unfortunately, I can't be more specific because that's sort of largely in the hands of a third party.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, are you considering making a share purchase to demonstrate belief in your projects to the markets?
Well, I've already done that. Put in £500,000 when I originally joined the company, and I think that's a very sort of significant validation of my intent and support, and my intent of ensuring that this is an outstanding company over the coming years.
Yeah, that is a big chunk. Fair play. So, another question here. When do you anticipate being able to update the market about how each project will be funded? What is your preferred method? This is the same person asking this. There has been much speculation that the Oman project will incorporate royalty-type funding. Should investors look to your involvement with Anglo Pacific as a clue to where funding may come from? I don't know if you can remember all that, David.
The two companies are entirely separate, and just a coincidence, I happen to be on the board of Anglo Pacific, and they have a royalty financing model there. But I think, in truth, the principal sources of our funding will be sort of conventional sources of funding, that is the equity capital markets and the debt capital markets. One of the very interesting things at the moment is that there's an enormous amount of money on the sidelines looking for worthy resources projects, and we've been very encouraged by the degree of interest that's coming from a number of private equity funds that specialise in the resources sector. And of course, there's conventional project financing, etc. Sort of the capital costs that we have in the back of our minds for the development of this project, this is not going to be sort of a challenging development by any stretch. And our shareholders should feel very content that this is all very doable and will make very good good sense as we roll up the funding plans.
Okay, how important was it that we got some local institutional investors? Have their local connections given us anything of value already?
Well, you know, we're sort of really looking at developing our shareholder base, specifically around Omani investment in our company. And, you know, I'd like to think over the coming months, we might sort of see some of that rolling in. And so, you know, I sort of see some degree of Omani ownership as being very important. We've got a very sort of solid commitment to developing the resources of this country, and we'd very much welcome very sort of solid Omani participation in the upside.
Yeah, okay, a couple more questions, because Savannah Resources is obviously very popular, David, because that's why you've got so many questions here. But that's a good thing, I suppose. Has there been speculation due to the logistical... there has been speculation due to the logistical and technical differences between your main projects that the company may split into two in the near future. Is this a possibility? Have you thought this over at all? Would this work?
Yeah, no, very much so. And we're, you know, very sort of conscious of delivering the best outcomes to our shareholders. If we sort of believe the parts are worth more than the whole, we'll certainly look very sort of seriously at sort of separating the assets. But we think at the moment, I think sort of aggregating the assets, having a larger rather than a smaller market capitalisation, I think is a better place to be. Better to have one larger company than two smaller companies. Now, I think at least for the time being, and until we sort of see how each of these projects matures and develops, I think they probably sort of sit relatively sort of comfortably together. And but as I say, we'll keep that very much under consideration and see how things pan out.
Okay. Okay. Last two. Do you accept the mild criticism from many private investors that your RNS's releases are somewhat overly technical, which has resulted in the market becoming unexcited about Savannah's prospects until more meat is put on the bone, possibly regarding returns? And the market likes to see clear signals of what sort of money profit could be generated. Do you see this as an issue, overly technical RNS's?
Well, in terms of the technicalities, I think we sort of rather sort of pride ourselves on being very professional and in our approach. So I do apologise if that might sort of result in RNSs, which seem to be a bit overly technical. On the other hand, you know, our announcement today was pretty sort of clear. There's a pretty big prize there. Just read that table with the copper tonnages there. So possibly, and we'll certainly look to try and perhaps enunciate the story in a sort of clearer way.
Yeah. Okay. And the last one, finally. What is your passion or drive, and what is it with Savannah Resources that keeps you there? What's the end game, David?
Well, I suppose the end game is to prove the market absolutely wrong about Savannah, in the sense of today it's trading at a price that I'm personally looking to improve on dramatically going into 2016. So that's my personal challenge, is to really get that share price motoring along despite the rather sort of difficult conditions resources company CEOs find themselves in at the moment.
Yeah, it is tricky, isn't it, at the moment? I mean, it doesn't matter what you're doing, essentially. And if you're a junior resource company, you're going to be a bit hammered, of course. So, you know, sentiment is against you. It's downward pressure, isn't it, I suppose.
Well, you know, in a rising market, people look at reasons to invest in you. In a market like this, the first thing people do is look for reasons not to invest in you. So swings and roundabouts, but you know, certainly my experience, having gone through a few of these cycles, is that investments at this point in the cycle, if you have a little bit of patience, can be supremely rewarding. So at 1.4p, you can buy yourself a lot of Savannah shares.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so in fact, just round up there for David, if you could. I mean, you've covered a lot of positive, positive reasons to invest in the company. But if you could just round up, say, in three of the most important points, why should someone invest in Savannah Resources?
High grade copper, a able and committed team of resources industry professionals, with the upside of a world-class heavy minerals resource in Mozambique.
Marvellous, David. It's lovely to chat to you. Thanks for taking the time out there in Oman. And hopefully you can come on again soon when you have some more news to share.
It'd be a great pleasure. Thanks.
Okay, it's time for today's penny stock with potential, as suggested by Groucho Marx.
You know what I'm saying? Uh-huh. I never forget a face, but in your case, I'll make an exception.
I used to love the Marx Brothers films. Really do. I had a period where I was quite young, actually. Just obsessed with them. Bought all the DVDs of them. Anyway, what's the name and ticker symbol of the company? It's Arima, or Arima Communications, AEO is ticker. What does the company do? Live events, agency company, under the brand name of Cheerful 21st. Would you say it's a long, medium, or short-term investment? Long-term. How many shares in issue? 9 million. What's current price and market cap? 31.75 pence. 3 million market cap. Let me just check out, because this was just maybe a day or so ago, and if it has, it may have gone down in this market. Who knows? Maybe even more of a bargain. AEO, it's at 31.5, so it hasn't moved a lot there. What the revenue profit loss does the company generate? Revenue, 4.93 million, profit, 383,000. Really? That's a small market cap for this. Is that the market cap for this company? How much cash does the company have? 1.56 million. Let me just check this out, because I just want to see if the market cap is correct there. Because without revenue and that cash, market cap 2.95, I'm seeing it right here. There, yeah. Listen, do your own research on this company. Good. So, there's three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, very low shares in issue. Yeah, 9. Yeah. And number two, it pays a dividend. This year it was 3 pence per share. Really? And they're astonishingly innovative and creative work has attracted customers such as the Cannes Lion Festival, Wrigley, Vodafone, Unilever, and Microsoft. Do you know what? That's why I love this feature. Thank you very much, Groucho Marx, for suggesting this stock. It's I don't know how to pronounce it. The ticker is AEO, but it's Arima Communications. So check that out. Do your own research, please. And if you know of a penny stock, please suggest it at sharepickers.com. Joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're right, Al?
I'm good, Joss. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I saw a stat, you know, on Friday. I can't think of the guy's name now. Jim Cramer from America, CNBC, and, Mad Money.
Oh, the mad guy, yeah.
Mad Money. You know, he's been a fund manager, he's been around for a while. But he tweeted out a stock saying, when the S&P on a Friday is more than a certain percentage down, the chance of it going down again on the Monday, like 80% chance.
Yep.
And so we can see that's pretty much happening today. It's gone a bit, we started off up, didn't we? And now it's dropped back a bit.
It's a weird thing. I was looking at the stock futures, US stock futures earlier, and yeah, they were looking, I mean, the Dow at one point was about 160 points ahead, and now it's 75 points behind. So it's up and down like a horse draws at the moment. I mean, it's, it's really hard to predict, but I think it's all, we're still shaky because of the oil price still falling. Big resource stocks, obviously, there's a big sell-off there. That's continuing. It's continued this morning. And of course, we've got we've just got this macro uncertainty at the moment, haven't we? And of course, there's that big elephant in the room, which is US interest rates. Will the Fed raise them this week? Won't they? But You remember we discussed Simon Watsonberg last week, and when I interviewed him on Tip TV. And he was saying, of course, that the K1T Capital Quant Trading System, which looks back 75 years on the S&P, in 75% of cases on the 15th of December, the S&P has risen and it's carried on rising after that. So actually, tomorrow is the day. So if you're feeling brave and if you want to test that system, you should be getting in really at these levels. Or possibly even, you know, if there's a further fall when the US markets open this afternoon, maybe sort of dip in at the close and try and pick something out for tomorrow. But it's hard to call at the moment, isn't it? Very hard.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I'm looking, if we're down today now, the FTSE is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This will be the 8th down day in a row. Yeah. Now, that doesn't happen very often. You can pretty much, you know, count those on one hand in the last, couple of years as that's happened. Doesn't happen very often. So you could almost say there's a good reason to go long based on that, you know. And I'm looking at a support level here. Like, we did get down to this level in September 29th, around 5958, and same again pretty much in August. So
yeah, we did.
Say there's a support level a little bit lower. We're close to a major support level here. Plus, like I said, the fact that it's been down so many days in a row, and the fact that there's that Santa rally maybe statistically going to happen. Yes, I mean, you've got to be brave, but sometimes it does bounce back when you least expect it, doesn't it? You know.
Well, I think, yeah, I have to say, I mean, I was just sounding out a few other people over the weekend, an old buddy of mine who we sort of restore classic buys together and other bits and pieces, but that's another story. We was chatting to somebody that works in a fund management group in the city over the weekend, and works on the risk in risk management, and he and the team basically are not overly optimistic about next year. In fact, they believe that the markets are going to continue falling in quarter one 2016, possibly even two periods of falling GDP growth, which could lead to another recession. So just to really sort of cheer you up on a Monday before Christmas, but that's obviously we've got to consider all these factors and weigh everything up. So it's very, very hard, to take a view at the moment. It's actually a trader's market. You know, if you're day trading, then this is ideal, because of course the movements are phenomenal. You know, you can get in and get out half an hour later and make a profit or a loss. You know, that's where we are.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you know what I've noticed? There is becoming a lack of interest on. I mean, I think, do you know what I genuinely think is the best thing to do in this situation is don't get stressed with it. Just switch off and walk away. Do something else. Because if everyone did that, the market wouldn't go down too far, because people wouldn't be selling. You know,
you're absolutely right. But of course, the one good thing in all this is that the big movements are coming from the major constituents of the index. The small cap stocks are just doing their own thing because they're valued purely on fundamentals, and they're far less affected by the day to day workings. Of course, the resource stocks, it's a slightly different story. But the stock I'm talking about today isn't affected by those factors at all. It's one that goes purely on the basis of its fundamentals. So anyway, we'll get to that shortly.
What is it, Al?
Okay, we'll get to it now. it's a stock we've discussed on several occasions before over the past year. Just it's Advanced Oncotherapy. The epicode is AVO. Now, this stock has had a massive amount of publicity over the past couple of years, well justified, of course. What do? Advanced Oncotherapy are in the field of proton beam therapy, which is, of course, this revolutionary new treatment for cancer. Traditional radiotherapy is a bit like a sledgehammer to crack a nut. It's where the whole area that's affected gets zapped with radiotherapy. Proton beam therapy is, in effect, a beam of particles that's about the width of a hair, so it can be finely targeted to treat tumours. And of course, there's been a lot of publicity recently with the NHS investment into proton beam therapy. The young lad Asher King, whose parents last year were arrested in Spain because they took him, they tried to take him out of the country from Southampton to receive proton beam therapy, which he ultimately did in Prague and Czechoslovakia. And his parents say he's now cured. So on the back of this, there's the NHS are developing a number of centres up and down the country. It's massive throughout Europe and in the US. But Advanced Oncotherapy are developing a proton beam therapy machine, which is unlike the existing solutions, which are huge and have to be housed in concrete bunkers. These machines are small portable machines and can be literally wheeled up and down corridors. That's probably a little excessive. To summarise, but I suppose if you wanted to draw a comparison, if you had a football field representing the existing size of proton beam therapy machines, this would be the size of a bus parked in the corner. So it's a very small machine in comparison.
Yeah. Well, I had Sanjeev on, and I did ask him straight. I said, as far as you're aware, are these the most advanced machines in the world? And he said, you know, yes, they are. There are proton beam therapy machines out there, but they're bigger, and they're actually not as accurate as this. And this is cheaper anyway, this machine. So it seems like it's a no-brainer for people to buy them. But
going back to the beginning of this, what's so significant about this is that advanced oncotherapy currently has a valuation of about £70 million. Now, before the machines before the components for the machines were even being built and tested, the brokers covering the stock were looking at this, and the analysts were looking at the letters of intent that have been signed, which are already at the £200 million mark. We've subsequently had additional agreements signed with Sanofi, by Sanofi Healthcare in China, and in other areas too. And at one point, the company valuation started to approach that. It hit about 16p. Since then, it's come back. But it's important to note that, as Sanjeev has said on the podcast, that All of the benchmarks and the milestones in testing the proton beam therapy machine and components have been hit. So it's on schedule to sell its first proton beam therapy machine at the end of next year. So we're in a position where the company's on schedule. It's generating additional interest all the time. Proton beam therapy is becoming ever higher profile, and yet the valuation has come back to roughly $70 million. And it really has, in my opinion, an extremely bright future. It is the future of cancer treatment, and it's the future of proton beam therapy. And I think once the manufacturers and the operators of the current system see this, it's going to change cancer treatment for everyone, which will be a marvelous thing. Never mind the valuation of the company or anything else. So AVO. AVO currently worth $70 million at the current level. In my opinion, could be a lot higher, should be a lot higher. We're going back to the valuation of the company from the brokers a couple of years ago, which was at about $200 million. So there is an awful lot of upside. And clearly, if by buying shares in this company, you're also supporting a revolutionary treatment for cancer too. So it's good all round. And again, in the current environment, the share price of the company won't be affected, simply because it operates purely on the fundamentals of the business and the forward sales of the business too. So there we go.
I mean, it has come back. Like you said, the price has come back. If you bought, because at one point it went up to 17 pence or something when it really went motored after the initial. But so if you did buy on that sort of spike, then you would be hurt by now, because we're 4.8 pence, of course. But like I said, I'm looking at the cash. They raised 21 million, didn't they? And it looks like they're burning around 10 million a year. So and Sandy just said that money would take them to production and sales.
It will.
So it looks like they will achieve that, and they've got some money coming in already. So hopefully there won't be any more raising needed until they get the first commercial contract away. So that's a good thing. Okay, lovely. AVO, we should get Sanjeev on, Al, soon.
We'll speak to Sanjeev and get it back on the podcast. Just one more thing to add. They also have a premises in Harley Street. They're actually opening their own centre, their own proton beam therapy centre, once the machines are in production. And interesting to note, the Evening Standard last week, Harley Street landlord Howard de Walden, the company that owned the properties in Harley Street, are going to be spending $200 million to boost what they call medical tourism, which its treatment. It's basically promoting the center as a center for treatment, and of course the other premises, operating surgeries and so on within Harley Street out to the wider public. So this is a good thing, and of course as part of that, the AVO Proton Beam Therapy Center will be promoted too. So there's an awful lot going to be happening in the next couple of years.
Marvellous. Cheers, Al.
Thanks, Jess.
That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. By all means, please do your research on any company mentioned in the podcast, like I said, because we may hold some. But please, if you can suggest a stock, go to sharepickers.com, or if you want to give me a review on iTunes, then I will dedicate the podcast to you. Just go to sharepickers.com, click the link, 5-star rating review, and I will read it out and dedicate the podcast to you. Mucho appreciado, eh?
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The people on this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about, so please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation, as it's just opinion. Please do your own research.